Hi everyone, it's Lydia here. Welcome back to the Weird Years podcast, where every week we take apart the big meltdown-inducing questions and decisions and places that we find ourselves in our 30s. Today's topic is a heavier one, but it's a really important one, and it's something that we're all going to navigate through at some point in our lives if you haven't already gone through this. We're going to talk about the loss of a parent. If, like me, even the idea of this makes you feel very panicked and your hands feel quite clammy, then I am completely in that situation with you. And it might feel like you immediately want to click off because this is a difficult conversation. But if you're able to, I really ask you to stay and to sit with us and to go through this conversation with myself and Freddie today, because regardless of how difficult it is, unfortunately, it is an inevitability of our lives. For some of you listening, maybe you are facing the potential loss of a parent. Maybe it's something that you've gone through recently or even years ago, or perhaps it's something that is a lurking fear in the back of your mind. But one thing that today's guest taught me is that grief is not linear, that it's not a thing that you can move past that has a timestamp. It's something that lingers, and it's a conversation that we should continue having. Today, Freddie joins us to talk about navigating not just the loss of one parent, but both of his parents by the really early age of 23. We talk about his journey of going from really avoiding grief to getting to the point where he can face it head on. And now in his 30s, what it's looked like, the changes, the process of it, and also what it's like to be navigating the weird years without those two people who have known you since the day you were born. And whilst there might not be any way to truly prepare yourself for losing someone that you love, whether that is a parent, a caregiver, anyone in your life, I think there's still a lot of value in having the conversation. Us Brits have a very strange relationship to grief, a strange relationship to loss. This idea of the stiff upper lip, that your grief could be inconvenient, that your grief could make other people uncomfortable. I think it's all things that we should be challenging. Ultimately, hiding your pain, it doesn't get us very far. Freddie is composed in a way that I couldn't imagine being in this situation. And whilst there's no tips or tricks for moving through grief, he shares a lot of wisdom and in a really compassionate way. I think you'll find this episode really helpful. So that's enough from me. Let's get into it. If life feels like a whirlwind of clarity and confusion, pull up a chair. Welcome to The Weird Years. Freddie, welcome to The Weird Years.
Thank you for having me.
I'm very excited to have you here, and also that you also are a Canary Wharf regular.
Yes.
Which is so rare.
Yes, it is. Yeah, not many people.
Not many people are here by choice.
Yeah. You kind of get forced to come here and then you kind of leave as soon as you can.
Yeah. And for anyone who hasn't come across you before, obviously I found you on Instagram through your profile, which is doing incredibly well. And yeah, I came across one of your reels and was like, oh my God, okay, this guy's story, I have to get him on the pod. For anyone who doesn't know you, tell us a little bit about who you are.
So I'm Freddie. I'm 32 years old. I'm married. I live in a village in Hampshire, and I organise events. But the reason why I created the Instagram account is because I lost both my parents, my dad when I was 12 and my mum when I was 23. Mm. So both of them, I was technically parentless by the age of 23. And I created the account essentially to, one, help myself, to talk about it, and also just to help anyone else who might be going through the same thing that I went through.
Yeah, and I feel like this is such an important topic of the weird years, because now, you know, we're into our 30s, a lot of people are either facing a parent who's unwell and, you know, there's a chance that they won't make it through, or people are starting to have the reality of, you know, losing a parent. I think it's so rare, someone having lost both of their parents at 23, obviously you don't expect that. You think you'll be into your 50s or 60s. Mm. I think I read in the US, it was like, I actually have it here, that 34% had experienced death of a parent by age 35. So it's not massive.
No.
And most people don't lose both their parents until like their mid-50s.
Yeah.
So it's quite a destabling thing for the whole part of your life.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. I'd love to go back to where it all started, kind of your situation with your dad.
So we were very fortunate when we were younger. With my dad's job, we ended up moving around quite a lot, and we lived in Singapore, Hong Kong, and New Zealand. And
cool.
The last place we lived was Singapore, and we were there for about 5 years in total. But whilst we were there, my mum was first diagnosed with breast cancer. Mm. So they found a lump originally, and then she had that removed. And then while she was in remission, my dad developed a brain tumour. And then whilst he was kind of going through chemotherapy and trying to battle that, my mum was then diagnosed with a second lump of breast cancer, which she then had a full mastectomy, was given a 1% chance of that cancer ever returning, which she thought, okay, that's great. And then she could focus on helping my dad, trying to get better himself. And then he didn't get better. And then
how long was he battling that for?
Just over a year.
Oh, wow. So not like...
Yeah, about 18 months, I believe. And eventually, they knew. For me at the time, I wasn't overly aware, because being 10 and 11, you're not. And then we basically had to come home. And then we came home in June 2005. And then in January 2006, he died. So we were home for about 6 months.
Wow. And you'd spent multiple years abroad. So were, like, had you not been around wider family for that whole period?
So we actually, funnily enough, I think my dad's job kind of, we'd move and then come back for six months and then move and then come back for six months. So we kind of were around and we saw family, and we used to come back every summer and see family. We'd come back from Singapore and see everyone, friends and family.
Mm.
But I hadn't been in the UK, so didn't have schools were new. Had to go to secondary school when I first came back. Obviously, I had some friends that I knew that were my family friends, but not a network to come back to.
Hmm.
So yeah, we did see them, but it wasn't kind of ready to go as soon as we got back.
Yeah, it wasn't home.
No.
Yeah. And so your dad's battling that for a year, and at the same time, your mum gets a diagnosis. Are they very open with you of everything that's going on at that time?
I think they protected us.
Mm.
As I don't know what I would be like in that situation, if you would be open with your children, or if you would try and protect them. Obviously, you're suddenly moving from Singapore back to England. You can see that your dad is unwell.
Mm.
You kind of, even at that age, you can put two and two together and come up with the fact that something's wrong, and you can see that he's unwell. But I think the extent of how unwell he was very much kind of kept from my sister and I, which I don't have any problems with the way my mum decided, and they decided to do that, because your childhood is, and your teenage years are meant to be these times that you're having all this fun and everything's happening and you're learning about yourself and going through those early years of your life. And I think if you then put all the detail on your children about what's going on, it could probably really badly affect them.
Yeah, definitely.
Which even losing the parent will affect them, but then maybe giving them all the details about all the treatments, all the appointments that they're going to, maybe isn't the right thing to do. But I don't know, I'd have not been in that situation, so I don't know what I would do myself. But
yeah, I mean, I have absolutely no idea how you'd go about navigating that, especially as I guess you keep hope for like as long as you can, right?
Mm.
There was a point where you were aware at some point of like, okay, both my mum and my dad were sick.
Yeah. We definitely knew that they were both sick, because they were in and out of hospital appointments and having surgeries. And obviously having surgeries, you know, they're happening because they're not around and they're in a hospital.
Yeah.
So yeah, we were definitely aware that it was happening. But I think the extent of just how unwell my dad was probably wasn't shared with us until right near the end.
And that came as quite a shock.
Yeah, we came back and he lived in the house for a little bit, the house we moved to, but he couldn't go upstairs or anything like that. So we had to take a video to show him the upstairs of our house one day, which I remember my mum doing. And then eventually he moved to a hospice. But then still, at that age, you don't really understand what a hospice is.
Hospice versus hospital.
Yeah, kind of the same thing. It's one a little bit, maybe one is just you're just there a little bit longer. Maybe he just needs to be looked after there for a bit and then he'll get better.
Yeah.
But then I still remember vividly being told by my mum to say goodbye to my dad for the last time.
Right.
When he was in the hospice and we went and visited him. And we were there that evening and my mum very much kind of made a point that we needed to say goodbye to him.
Mm.
I probably still didn't even kind of put two and two together and work out why I needed to do that. But then I remember mum coming back later that very late that night and waking us up and telling us that my dad had died. So yeah, I think you, and also when you're that young, even in later life, I think you still very much think, oh, they will get better. I don't want them to be unwell. I want them to stick around. I don't want them to die. So you're kind of thinking in the back of your head, they'll get better.
Yeah.
They will get better. It's fine.
Yeah.
But then clearly they don't.
And at that point in your life, had you ever experienced grief? Because like, I'm fully aware that I don't think I had any like serious grief in my life until, God, at least like 20-something when my first granddad passed away. Like, it was such a concept that I wasn't familiar with.
Yeah. No. So but I had a few pets that had died, but nothing.
They go to live on a farm. Anyway,
yeah, they do. But nothing to the extent that, obviously losing your dad. So it's the first time I had ever dealt with grief in that way, yeah.
And at the point when your dad passed away, was your mum still going through her treatment? Or was
No, she was in remission. She was in clear at that point. Okay. So she was, by the time we came back to England, she was in remission. She was clear. She'd got the diagnosis that she had 1% chance of ever coming back. So she was in as complete health as she could be.
Yeah.
Obviously, having gone through a mastectomy. So, but you know, she was fine as such at that time.
Yeah. I mean, that's like a small, I guess for her, that must have felt like, have you ever talked about that with your mum, how that felt? At least you're thinking, okay, I'm going to be here.
Yeah. No. So, and it's one of the things that, since I've created this page, that there's so much that I'd wished I'd asked before my mum died. Now that I'm getting older and going through life as my parents did, not exactly the same, but going through the same parts of life that they did, there's so much that I wished I'd asked my mum about. And one of those would have been, that time must have been really, really tough for you. Like, just talk to us, tell me about what it was like and that whole period in your life. Obviously, she might not have wanted to, but no, I never actually talked to her about it, which is something now that I regret, is that I wish I'd maybe... But then I don't think you're aware. I don't think you're aware of that until you get older. And then suddenly you go back and you think, that must have been really tough for my mum.
It's like those moments when you realise that your parents are like people as well. Like, you see them as your parents. And then I think as you get older, you start to realise like you have a first heartbreak or something. And then, you know, you talk to that with your parents. And then you have these moments when you're like, my parents, for example, are divorced. And now it's only now I'm married and have been with my partner for, you know, 10 plus years that I can really understand like the concept of divorce in the same way. So that must be, really, I imagine, like, you know, with grief in general, there's this kind of theory in society that people say, like, you know, it gets easier with time and that things kind of get lighter with time. Is that something that you buy into as a concept?
Yes.
Yeah?
Yeah, no, I do. Grief is always going to be there. That is something which I've realised through time. Maybe when I was younger and my mum first died, I thought eventually I would just, like, everything would just go back to normal and I won't think about it as much, or it won't affect me as much. But then I've come to realise over time that grief will always be there. It does get easier, but it will appear, and it will appear in moments that sometimes you don't expect it to. And sometimes it will appear when you know it's going to. Like, for example, a wedding day, for example. Or you buy a new house and you want to tell them about it. And those moments. We were very, very fortunate, my sister and I, that my mum actually wrote some letters to us before she died. So she wrote 3 letters to us, one which she wrote for us to read whenever we wanted to. As in, like, just open it for the first time, read it when you want to. A second one to open when you got married, and a third one to open when you had children. Aww. I've opened 2 of those 3. And they were really, really special to read. And especially because she probably, in foresight, knew that those 3 moments might be difficult times for us, and thought my words could comfort them in that moment that they're struggling and thinking about us. So that was something that was really quite special to have those.
Yeah, that's super.
And also must have been so tough to write them as well.
Totally. I can't even, yeah.
To the idea to have to write something that you know you won't be there to see them open.
Yeah.
Must have been incredibly tough for her.
It's like that show, is it called Life? The one with...
Ricky Gervais.
Ricky Gervais.
Yes.
Life.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's like the videos. I remember the videos of his wife that she's recorded, like for him along the journey. But also, I guess, you know, you deal with your first serious like relationship or you start the relationship with grief when you're 12. How like did that feel different when your mum then passed away? Or how did that, your dad passing away at the beginning, like did you start to expect that bad things happened or how did that impact you at such a young age?
So I think... When I was 12, I mean, the overarching feeling that I had at the time was sort of, why me?
Mm.
Because you, obviously your dad dies and then life kind of still continues around you as it should. And then you start going to, at the time I was very much enjoyed playing football. So on the weekends I would go to play football for my football team and you'd see all the dads on the sidelines and you'd be like, why? And I have to say, my mum did take on that mantle when she came to everyone. If it was wet and cold, she'd sit in the car, but she at least came to watch me, which is very good of her. But then at the same time, I'm thinking, why isn't my dad not here?
Mm.
And I also remember, weirdly enough, when I was 12 years old, that I used to kind of think, maybe he'll just come back.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because when you're 12, and obviously I wasn't there when my dad did die, my mum was there, you kind of, in your warped childhood mind, probably think, oh, maybe he'll come back, maybe I'll see him. And obviously you read those silly articles about people whose parents just, like, ran off.
Right. You used to read that kind of stuff and think, yeah, maybe this isn't the story. In a kind of daydream world, he might walk in one day.
Yeah, maybe. It was just like... Maybe he'll just come back again.
Mm.
But then I think that was probably just my mind playing tricks on me to be like, actually, and maybe that was me being like, actually, I don't want to grieve properly.
Yeah.
That this didn't all happen, he'll come back and it will just be normal again. Mm. But yeah, so I think when I was 12, I was kind of, why me? And I probably didn't really actually grieve properly for my dad, I would say, if I look back now.
Mm.
But I think because when you're 12, you're so ingested in like just school life and being cool and having friends and football and all those sorts of things that you kind of take your mind away from them.
Also, to be fair to yourself, it's not like all those things are more interesting, but you also don't have the emotional regulation or breadth of feelings or words to do that stuff. Like I was listening to a podcast, it was actually Jamie Lang's podcast. He had Spencer Matthews on and they were talking about Spencer had like an older brother who had died. I can't remember which mountain he was. I think he was on Everest. He passed away on Everest.
Yeah.
And Spencer said a similar thing. He was like, I was so young that I just presumed in like a year or two's time he would turn up in Nepal and like he actually wasn't dead. And obviously, you know, different circumstance because they didn't find his body or recover him or anything. But it's kind of like this protection mechanism maybe to close down a bit and not feel it. Because how do you feel something that large at such a young age?
Yeah, absolutely. It's such a tough thing to go through also when you're going through the emotions of being a teenager as well, to then chuck in there that you're grieving for your dad as well. I look back on it now and there's probably ways that I would have done it better and dealt with it better, but I was 12 and I probably in my mind wanted to not have to think about it.
Totally.
I wanted just to be a normal teenager and like my friends were and just like, as I said, just do the normal things that teenagers do.
Yeah.
So I probably didn't actually really grieve properly for him at that time.
Yeah. And when you're there, your mum then gets sick, because she has her double mastectomy.
Mm-hmm.
She's got 1% chance of it coming back. What does it feel like, or what's the process when you then hear like, actually, no, you know, your mum has got cancer again?
So I was 17 at the time. when we found out she got secondary cancer. Mm. And I just remember at the time thinking, I'm going to be 18. At the time, she was given 6 months to live as well.
Oh, wow.
So
yeah.
I was 17. I'd say I was 17, year 12 kind of territory. And she was given 6 months to live at the time.
God.
And I remember just thinking, I'm going to be 18 years old and not have any parents. And just thinking, again, the why me? Like, why us? Why my sister and I? Why do we have to lose one parent? And then before we've even enjoyed the majority of our lives with a parent, then find out that you might then not have a second parent by the time you turn 18. So that was incredibly tough because, again, at 17, you're university, you're thinking about university, thinking about your degree, you're thinking about what you can do in your life. And suddenly you've got given this horrific news that your parents might not, your mum might not be there for even when you go to university.
Yeah. Is your sister older or younger?
She's younger.
Wow. So you're also thinking like, okay, like, do I run a house? Because at 18, you wouldn't go into care, I guess. Like,
No.
When you're younger, you're a child. But at 18, you're kind of on your own.
Technically, you can be out to the workforce at 18, can't you? So, I don't think you'd go into care. You wouldn't. But then, at the same time, you're thinking, like, 18, I do want to go to university. Do I still go to university? Do I not go to university? And then kind of what happens afterwards. But very, very fortunately, my mum kind of kicked on for 6 years in the end.
Yeah.
But at the time it was, what's going to happen now? Because there's so many life situations about to happen, big decisions I need to make. And what do I need to do if my mum's going to die? Do I need to be here for my sister? Do I go to university? Do we sell the house? Do we buy a new house? What do I do here? Yeah, I just remember being just completely taken aback by it.
Sounds like panic. Like,
it was, yeah. And I think the problem is that the way, at that time was when I first started doing my first sessions of therapy, was when she got that diagnosis. But I don't think I probably used it to the extent that I should. And unfortunately, I think what would happen is I would, obviously at 17, you're going to house parties and your stuff and you're drinking for the first time.
Yeah.
Not you should be, but you still are. And all my emotions would come out when I've been drinking. So I'd have some drinks and then suddenly I would just be sat in someone's garden being upset because my mum's dying.
Yeah.
And that was probably not the right way to deal with it at the time. But there was just such a big decisions in my life coming up and I've just got this really horrible news, but I was dealing with it completely the wrong way.
Yeah. Well, also I think, again, you can't like judge yourself for... It's an incredibly like difficult position to be thrown into, I think at any age, but especially at, 17, 18. And when you heard that news of your mum, and then as you said, she continued to live for another 6 years, was that kind of always in the back of your head of like, okay, I'm getting, like, this is a ginormous fear we're moving towards? Or was it more like, okay, I'm learning to cope with this loss that's going to happen?
I definitely was learning to cope with the loss that was happening. I think... Similarly to like when my dad died, when my mum just continuously just kept beating all of the recommendations, but all the kind of, you've got 6 months, or maybe you'll do 18 months, or maybe you'll do 3 years. And every time she just continuously just kept breaking through those barriers, a part of me probably thought she'd be there forever. So I went for university. Obviously, a few times I'd think, mum's going to die soon, but... All the news coming out from what she was telling me was that she was doing well. So obviously she was going through chemo, she was going all sorts of treatments, but she was still my mum and she was still living her life to the fullest as much as she could do. So in my head, I was probably thinking, oh, actually, yeah, she's going to be fine.
Yeah,
like she'll just live with this forever, or at least for a very long time. Obviously, she didn't in the end, but at the time, I just remember just thinking, actually, yeah, she's okay, and she probably will be. So I will just continue with my life as I have planned, and we'll just see where it goes.
Yeah. How did that journey go from, because I think everyone listening would have had that relationship with alcohol, like in their teenage years, where it's such an amazing crutch at the time for whatever you're going through, whether that's like first breakups or like much more, I guess less serious things. But what shifted you from that more kind of self-destructive path, like what made you kind of move towards being like, okay, I need to cope with this differently?
So it was after my mum died. So after she died, I remember she died in January 2017, And in May 2017, I was watching The Marathon in the morning on BBC. And I remember just looking at watching it, thinking, I enjoyed running. I was never, like, I would go for the odd run with a friend and stuff. I was always quite an active person, but I never really thought I could go and do something like that.
Mm.
Well, I remember waking up that morning and just thinking, I want to go do that next year. And I want to go do it in memory of my mum and dad.
Mm.
And I'll raise money for cancer research. And I will go and run that marathon. Did the application form online. Didn't hear back for months. And then one day I woke up and I had a letter through the door. And it was a letter from Cancer Research saying, you've got a place in London Marathon next year.
First time as well.
Yeah.
That's really good.
I think obviously on the form you have to write why you're doing it. And I think having two parents and die from cancer, I think it probably helps.
Yeah.
And so then I remember at that point just thinking, actually, yeah, I need to take this seriously now. So I text a friend who was a PT and I said, can you write me a running plan? I'm going to run the marathon next year. I've got in and I want to take this seriously and I want to do it properly. And that was when I probably really started thinking about what I need to do to kind of manage my grief. Mm. And there were parts of it that I didn't really talk about it. I didn't talk about it for ages. I had a couple more things, like sessions of therapy.
Would you talk about it with friends? Like if you met new people or, you know, at this point you've gone from university, you're going into your first job, presumably your mum passes away. And then, you know, if that ever came up as a topic, would you say like, you know, actually both my parents have passed away, or would you not mention it?
I wouldn't really tend to mention it. I did mention it to my wife on our first date though. Mm. I did.
That's a nice sign that.
Yeah.
Obviously a good first date, good judge of character.
But no, I wouldn't really. I wanted my 20s to still be that carefree 20s that everyone else was living around me.
Mm.
And I didn't want to miss out on that. And very similarly, my mind probably thought, actually, don't talk about it or don't tell people about it, because you still kind of want to go about and live your life. And you don't want people to kind of feel sorry for you or sad for you. Because I still wanted to just be a free, fun-loving 23-year-old. I didn't want to be the guy who's lost both his parents. That's not who I wanted to be.
Which is such a strange, like, it feels like a very British, like, I think as British people, we have a very weird relationship to death and to grief.
Mm.
Like, when you compare it to other cultures, we've got this very kind of, like, stiff upper lip, and I think this idea that our grief and our pain is almost like rude or inconvenient to other people. Mm. It's like, well, you don't talk about that because it'll make them uncomfortable. And the same that you don't ask someone like whose parents passed away, like, oh, how are you actually doing? Because it might make them uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And actually it almost creates this like ginormous void of conversation that like death is all around us all the time. We're all going to go through it with many different people that we love, but it's almost like this vacuum of conversation.
Yeah. And how do you bring it up?
Yeah.
Like, do you just, especially I found in a more like serious, not serious conversations, but conversations with like people you work with or people or that you come across in your like working life. And then, you know, how you always be like, oh, how was your weekend? Or someone would be like, oh, yeah, it was good. It was my birthday. It's like, oh, did you see your parents? You'd be like, or they're dead.
Mm.
And you're like, oh, how do I say that? Or how do I broach that subject? And then you just go, no, I didn't see them, or oh yeah, I saw them, and just kind of brush it under the carpet.
Right.
Because why should you brush it under the carpet? But there's that sort of very British way of thinking, oh, don't bring up something like that. It's best just to keep that.
Yeah, it's private.
It's private. Yeah, keep that. Keep
cry
that.
in your own house.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So it's interesting because how do you bring it up? Do you just like mid conversation just go, oh, by the way, my parents died.
Yeah.
My parents have died. Well, no.
Have you ever heard of death doulas? Because this is
yes,
I've
I have.
So interested in this recently because, like, we lost my granddad a couple of years ago, and my grandma is 93,
mm-hmm.
and she is like a force of a woman. Like, who knows how long she has left? But I was like, I feel like I need to see a death doula to like almost coach me
mm-hmm.
mentally, like to start almost like thinking about the process in a more healthy way. Because when you know it's an inevitable thing, like a 93-year-old grandparent, like I just thought there was such an interesting concept for anyone who hasn't heard of them.
there are people who either work with like the, well, often the family, but also someone who is passing away or like he's going into hospice care, and they, they're similar to a doula for birth. It's like they know the ins and outs of like the grief process and the medical process and how to make someone like comfortable with the concept of end of life, which I thought was fascinating.
Yeah, I also think it would be really helpful for people to understand a bit more what happens legally after people die as well.
Oh, yeah, tell me more about that.
Because there's a whole, obviously, wills get involved. You have to deal with funerals, funeral costs, and you have to tell lots of people that they've died. Lots of governmental organisations, you have to tell them that you've died, that they've died. Very fortunately, there is one website which you can actually use, which you can go to, which will tell all those governmental organisations straight away. You've got to tell pension companies that they've died.
Right.
Obviously, if it's sudden, you have to tell their work. I think, and that's more something that's maybe needs to change in general, but I think it would be very helpful for people to understand what happens after someone dies. We were very fortunate. My mum is that she was, when she was 6 years after she was given the 6 months that she was meant to live, she was then given another, this is the official 6 months.
Okay.
You have got, you've got 6 months to live.
They're like, this is an actual.
This is it. Essentially. Yeah. Like, you have 6 months to live.
Right.
And because she was obviously had that kind of timeline set, we were very much able to have conversations with lawyers and with hospitals and with all the different people we needed to, just to kind of understand what would happen afterwards. But if you're in a situation where it's sudden, you suddenly have to learn that instantly.
Yeah.
Because it just has to happen. There's nothing you can do about it. I think you have 2 weeks to register the death after they die in this country. And obviously, if you're in shock or can't quite come to terms with it, that's not a lot, huge amount of time. So we were very fortunate in that way. Unfortunately, or the other way around, that we were able to have those conversations. But if you're not in that situation, it can be quite tough.
Did you have conversations of what she would want as like a ceremony and things like that?
We did. Yeah, we did. We did have those conversations just to kind of see what she wanted. She wanted out of the day. But I think it's important to have those conversations because, especially after they die, if you're lucky enough that you know it's going to happen and it's not sudden, you shouldn't be worrying about those sorts of things after they've died. Like, which song should we play as they come down? What should we do? What food should we serve? Or what should people wear? Or so on. Where would she want to go? What should we book? Those are conversations you do not need to have.
Yeah, you almost, I mean, you see these on like adverts on TV of like funeral direct, like funeral planners and things, and you always think, oh, that's such a bizarre concept. But it's true. It's like, well, once that happens inevitably to any of us, you don't want your family, I mean, as someone who's organised a wedding, it's like, it's a lot of work and it's a lot of decisions and it's incredibly stressful. And on top of that, you're doing it to honour someone who you really loved.
Yeah.
So it's like how, anything that people can do to prepare for that stuff sounds really solid.
Absolutely, yeah.
It's also interesting, I think, that I was thinking about like the other cultures and how people deal with death. And now that both your parents have passed away, do you feel like comfortable? Do you talk about them a lot? Like, is it something now you've gone through that process of, you know, you started running and it seems like running is a massive healing thing for you.
Absolutely. So obviously running was my main output for the vast majority of my grieving period after my mum died. But recently, actually since I set up the page, I've actually had much more conversations and talk about them much, much more openly than I ever have done before. Like I talk to my wife a lot more about it. We'll go to the pub and have a couple of drinks and she'll ask me some questions about things that happened, like last memories or things I wish I'd done. And even friends, I think now, feel like they can more openly talk to me about it. Because before they probably thought he doesn't talk about it, so I won't ask him questions about it because maybe he's not comfortable talking about it.
Yeah.
But now that I talk about it so openly in a public forum, they know that I'm happy talking about it, and I'll happily answer any question anyone has to talk about them, because I don't want to forget them.
Yeah.
I want them to be as a part of my life, even though they've died. I want people to know who they are. I want to know who they are. There's stuff I wish I'd done before they died, absolutely. And there's moments where I will miss them. There's moments that I will grieve and I will cry. But I think the last 6 months I've probably got to the best place that I've been. And that's 9 years after my mum died.
Wow.
Or 8 years. Yeah. because it'll be 20 years in January since my dad died and 9 years in January since my mum died. So yeah, that's 8 years, nearly 9 years. And I probably I'm in the best place I've ever been.
There's also like a real power, I think, in, have you ever heard of like somatic therapy and things? There's a lot of evidence of like actual movement of your physical body, like how it unlocks emotions. Mm. So it could even be that like through your journey of running and like how you've now built that into your life, that it actually helps you like process things.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I can go for a run and a song will come on that reminds me of them.
Mm.
And just in that moment, I will just smile and think to myself about moments that I had with them. And there'll be times when I'm running, especially before, I think when I was running after mum died for the first marathon that I ran, there was probably times when I would run and I would probably just be crying whilst I ran. And those would be the release for me, would be in that moment, because I was running and it was just me and my thoughts and some music coming on. And I'd always go really early on a Saturday morning. I'd get and run to Central London at like 7 o'clock in the morning. Mm. So there'd be no one around. So obviously you have the kind of romantic part of London when it's the city centre quiet and you're just running with some headphones in and you're thinking about your parents and the song will come on and I probably would cry. Mm. Whereas now actually I go for runs and it's more actually the happy feelings. Yeah. But I still think about them, and I think before I probably thought, I shouldn't talk about them. I should bury it.
Yeah.
But now I'm very much, no, I'll talk about it. I want to talk about them.
It's also that thing of, people avoiding versus speaking about it, is that sometimes it's really difficult when you lose someone you love and people don't ask about it.
Mm.
Because you're kind of like, you're almost wanting to, because you're like, well, I do have all these happy memories, and, you know, it can be really difficult, as you say, to bring it up proactively.
Yes.
If people are like, oh, I know this person's died, and then you want to be like, oh, you know, my granddad used to do this thing, it was hilarious, and then people sort of freeze and feel uncomfortable.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think, yeah, it's difficult to know how to bring them up. Mm. But then a part of me wants to be someone who brings them up. I don't want to bring them up all the time.
Mm.
I want to be the person who talks about them all the time. But at the same time, I don't want to never talk about them. And it took a while for me to get to that point where I realised actually it's better to talk about them than it is not to.
Yeah, and you mentioned when we first started chatting, you were saying that there's moments where you expect the grief to come up, things like a wedding day, and there's the moments where it kind of creeps in silently, or maybe it hits you very suddenly. What are some of those moments that, you know, on this podcast we're always talking about navigating the weirdness of your 30s, and I can imagine that not having your parents around adds a whole other, you don't have that kind of confidant to talk to with some of these things.
Mm.
Where are the moments where you've really felt it the most?
So one of them was when I was thinking about proposing to my wife.
Mm.
Because in that moment you obviously don't want to tell the world, because the whole point is that it's a surprise.
Yeah.
And you don't want to tell all your friends, you don't want to tell like all your family, but there's two people you probably would want to tell. I did tell her mum, because her mum's very important to her, and So I told her, but apart from that, I didn't tell anyone else. But in that moment, I probably would have, that was when I remember thinking, actually, going to buy the ring and doing all those parts that come with it. And I was thinking to myself, actually, I would have liked to have asked or spoken to him about that moment. Getting a new job, getting new jobs, that's always something. Or if I'm thinking about like career path or so on, because you want to kind of talk to people who've been there and done it before.
Yeah.
And obviously there are family friends that my parents have known that I still talk to them. But obviously they've got their own lives to go through and so on. So you don't want to be calling them up all the time and be like, I'm thinking about doing this. What's your advice? Buying new houses. It's all those big milestones that kind of happen. When I was obviously, me and my wife, and we were dating, introducing her to them, was also a big moment, because you just think, I wish you'd known them.
Mm.
I wish you'd known my parents, because she obviously doesn't know. She's never met them. So obviously she sees photos and stuff like that, but she's never met them. And I would love for them to have met her, because she's amazing. So that's probably, it's just those really big milestones.
Mm.
And sometimes even little milestones that you just want to tell them about, like, got into the marathon. I'll tell you, I got the marathon.
Yeah.
I'm running this, I'm doing that. I'm going on a holiday. Or even like, sometimes I find, when you get back from a trip and you have all these photos, you want to send them to them and just be like, look at this amazing trip we've just been on. Look at all these things, cool things we saw. we can't. There's no one to send them to. So, yeah, it's just all those kind of milestones that in your 20s you just go through, and you kind of, when you hit them, you just say, I'd love to tell my parents about this moment.
Mm.
And sometimes you just think, I just go, oh, yeah, well, obviously I can't tell them about it. But sometimes I'm actually, like, this is actually, yeah, I'm upset about this. This is, I'm grieving this moment because I wish I could tell them about it, because it's, I'd love to hear their guidance or their love, their happiness in this moment that I will never hear from them.
And to sit in it and feel it, I guess, when those moments come up as well, right?
It's like,
it's important to do. Did you find that, you know, losing them at such a young age, did your friends become like more important, or like did you have almost like a kind of surrogate family that you built? Obviously now you have your wife, so you have like your own kind of family.
Yes,
you
know? Yeah, absolutely. So obviously they're very close to my sister. And we have some family friends that invite us to Christmas. We go there between Christmas and New Year every year, and we have done every year since my mum died. So they kind of taken us in. My mum's birthday is also Christmas Day as well, which makes that day even more difficult.
Yeah.
And if, even with that, on that Christmas Day, we still kind of in the morning, my wife and I have it as my mum's birthday, and we go for a walk, and she should make these little canapes, and she'd have champagne in the morning for her birthday, and we still do the same thing now. Mm. And then my friends were just, I remember just them kind of just basically picking me up and just basically looking after me, especially after my mum died. They all came to my mum's funeral. They were really, really a big support network for me after my mum died. And some family friends have been very close to us, family have been very good to us. I think a lot of people kind of in that moment did kind of think we need to be there for them, and they were.
Yeah. It also makes me think like how, you know, I think everyone has a really different dynamic with their parents. I've definitely like got closer to mine as I've got older, but that you almost don't even realize how many moments you probably like think of reaching out to them. Like when you were saying that, you know, you come back from holiday and stuff, it got me thinking, God, like the amount of times I text my mum of like really stupid stuff that I should Google, of like, you know, this chicken has been in the fridge for 4 days, and it's like, I'm 33 years old. I really shouldn't be asking my mum this stuff. But yeah, it's almost like a, I think if people are lucky enough to still have their parents, like a takeaway from this is also to maybe notice some of those things of, because as you said, like there's things now that you wish you'd spoken to them about or got the chance to say to them, which you just don't ever know what's coming around the corner.
Yeah, no, absolutely. My wife and her mum are very close, and so are her siblings to her mum, and they talk to each other on the phone 2 or 3 times a day. And it's lovely. It's really, really lovely.
That is cute.
And I just love hearing the conversations and them talking to each other all the time, because I obviously would like to have that for myself, but it's so nice seeing that so close to me as well, that wonderful relationship that they have.
Mm. What have you like learned about grief that you wish people your age, like our age, understood?
I think the biggest one is that grief just takes time.
Hmm.
And you may not feel it immediately afterwards, because you have so much going on afterwards.
Hmm.
You have the funeral, you have all the legal stuff, you have selling a house, if you need to sell a house, you have possessions, you have clearing out clothes, you have all of these things that you need to do immediately after they
it's
die.
It's so practical.
Yeah, it's so tough, but it makes it really easy for you to bury your head in the sand, because you just go step after step after step of stuff that I need to do after they've died, that you don't really think about yourself. But I found that grief just hit me a lot later after my mum died, because suddenly, like, lots of stuff is sorted, and you'll just be sat there one afternoon and you'll just suddenly just go, oh, wow, I miss them. I miss her. I miss my dad. I miss my mum. And this is what grief feels like. But at the same time, I thought I'd grieved with like the funeral and stuff, but actually I probably hadn't. The grief had come later. And also the fact that it will just always be there as well. Grief will never go away. Because how can you ever not grieve your parents?
Yeah.
They were such a big part of your life, and they're no longer there for you. And they're not there for you. They've died. And you'll never forget them.
Mm.
But I think for me, when my mum first died, I probably thought, oh, yeah, I'll grieve for a bit and then life will just go on.
Mm.
And obviously I'll think about her, but that'll be that. But no, I think the thing is that grief will take its time and that it will just always be there. I think are the two things that I would, if someone that's my age was going through this, would be the things I'd want to tell them.
Yeah. I was listening to, it was actually Simon Cowell was talking about like losing his, I think he lost his dad when he was in his early 30s and losing his mum in his mid 50s. And he said that like it wasn't until he had a child that it also like really brought up so much more grief because it was, thinking of all the things of like, you know, then not having a grandparent and like navigating those first without someone who's been there and also who's raised you, because you have these questions of like, you know, oh, did I start walking that early? Or like, did I do this when I was small? And I thought that was, really impactful, because you think of, you suddenly reframe people who might be in their 50s or the 60s and they're like, you're like, oh, yeah, they're still someone's child. You know, it's such a...
Yeah, I imagine for my sister's got two children. Mm. And I imagine for her, that must have been so tough to... And she's still bringing them up, but to bring them up and then not have any grandparents on my sister's side, and to have to kind of have those conversations with them very early on, and they're very aware that both their grandparents on my sister's side have died, and they talk about them very openly, which is great. But just to have that conversation with a child must be tough, because they probably don't really understand it. Mm. They might ask questions that you probably might feel a bit emotional about. But the child hasn't put any thought behind that.
Yeah.
They've not, like, they might ask, oh, when are they coming back? Or can they come, like, if you say that, obviously a lot of time you tell children they're in heaven, and that's kind of where we as British people explain where they are.
Mm.
They could say, are they going to come back?
Yeah.
And they're...
Well, like, can I go?
Can I go? Like, can I go see them? And you're like, no. But at the same time, you're probably thinking, I wish they could come back.
Yeah.
Up there and actually come and see you, because... they're never going to, they've never seen the next generation, they never see their grandchildren.
Mm.
And you would have, and I imagine my sister would have absolutely loved for them to, and I know she would have loved for them to have met my mum and my dad, but they can't. And yeah, I think it must be really tough to have those conversations.
Yeah. You talked about from a practical side, because one of the things I was thinking for the listeners is like people who are facing having like a parent who's really ill, or that they know, you know, that maybe they had just declining health in general, they know that was coming for their parents. What's something that you would say to someone who is kind of in the grips of probably losing a parent? You've said the kind of like very practical side. Is there anything like emotionally that you were like, okay, this would have really helped me if someone had said it at the time, or something I could have done at the time?
Yeah, there's two things. The first one, and it's something that I've, over the last 6 months, that I've really, really thought about, is I wish I'd asked more about them.
Mm.
Ask them about their lives, ask them about their wedding day, ask them about the places they visited, the jobs they had, all that sort of stuff. Because once they're gone, you can't ask those questions anymore.
Yeah.
You can't find out the information. Obviously, you can ask family, you can ask friends and stuff, but like, they're not going to know of a lovely dinner that they had once at this really favourite restaurant that's still going in somewhere in London that they went to.
Yeah.
Or this hotel that they stayed in somewhere in a random village in a random country. So that's, for me, that's one of the things I wish I'd done. I think with my dad, I would have been too young to kind of think about that. With my mum, obviously I was 23, and if I'd maybe thought about it a bit more and stuff, I could have asked her those sorts of things, because I wish I'd known. I wish I'd know now what their lives were like and what they did and where they visited and who they saw and all those sorts of things. The second one is that no matter how much you prepare yourself for when they do die, nothing will actually prepare you for that moment. Because even though I knew my mum was dying for years, and then even when she was given the 6 months to live, I genuinely thought that I could prepare myself for this. And I remember, I believe it was November time when she told us. And I remember vividly still getting the text message. I was at work at the time and basically told to come home straight away. And then she told us. And then I remember when we were in the hospital for like 6 days, and we basically just slept in the hospital. We were very, very fortunate to get a room with an extra bed, and my sister and I just, and then they wheeled in a third bed, and we basically stayed there for 6 days. And I remember thinking to myself, like, I know she's dying. Like, this is going to happen. I know it's going to happen. unprepared. Mm. She's going to die. She's not going to be here in a few days' time. And that's right. I'll be good. But then actually when they do die and you go home and you and they're not there anymore and you have to go through all their stuff and you see photos of them and they're no longer texting you or calling you or around, you then kind of actually go, wow, they are not here anymore. And I will never hear from their voice again. I will never hear from them again. I will never give them a hug. I will never give them a kiss. I will never have a drink with them in the garden. I will never watch a film with them or anything like that. And then that moment will hit you even though you think you're prepared for it.
That's a really, good, I guess, headspace too. Well, as you said, it's like prepare to be not prepared almost.
Yeah.
Like you can't prepare.
You can't prepare as much as you think you can. I think it's just allow yourself to know if afterwards you feel really, it hits you more than you could ever imagine. Just know that you're allowed to feel that way even though you knew it was going to happen, because nothing can ever prepare you for the loss of someone close to you.
Yeah. In this podcast, we talk so much about like how this decade teaches us who we are as people, as individuals, and that every experience we go through like teaches us so much. Is there something that grief and this process has taught you about yourself?
I think it's probably taught me that I just need to be more open. I think the last 6 months especially has really taught me that. Why didn't I do this 3 years ago?
Right.
I sit and think to myself, I think, why did I not just talk about this so openly 3 years ago? Why has it taken me nearly 9 years to actually genuinely feel comfortable and want to talk about it so openly? Why did I not do that sooner? And I think that's probably what grief has taught me the most, is to talk about it.
Yeah.
Don't just suffer silently or not talk about it. Just talk about it. Because if you'd asked me a year ago that I'd be sat here talking about this, I probably would have said, no chance.
Yeah.
Why would I talk about it so openly like this?
Yeah.
But I've now got to the point where actually I've realised that this is exactly what was kind of missing, was me actually just talking about it. Because, and it seems so simple, you hear people talk, and we're much better now than we used to be in this country about people, telling people to talk about it. But actually to get people to talk about it is a whole different ball game. And I think, that's just been the big thing for me, is actually just realizing talking actually really does help.
Yeah. And seeing it modeled for someone as well, right? Is like, you know, I think especially for men, it's even harder often to like open up with these vulnerable conversations. So like the content that you're putting out, 100% people will be sitting with that and being like, oh, okay, well, you know, if he can do it, then I can do it. And I also love that you tie so much of it into your running, because it makes it feel like something that's very like achievable. And there's also so much psychology with men that they find it easier to express emotions with movement.
Yes.
It's a really, I think, powerful thing that you're doing.
Thank you.
Socials. What are your socials so anyone can follow you?
So it's just Instagram. My tag is F_Oscar_R.
And we do, I was like, I don't know whether to do this segment at the end, because usually it's really stupid. And obviously this is quite a serious topic, but I had to play around with them, and some of them are reflective and maybe some of them are a bit sillier, but we do a segment called Yes or Mess, which is like rapid fire questions where if you're into it, you agree with it, you say yes. If you're like, no, that sounds like a bad idea, don't agree, it's mess. There's five of them.
Okay.
You don't have to be really strict on rapid fire, but that's the goal. So number one is the idea that time heals all wounds.
Yes. But it makes the wound smaller. So I wouldn't say time heals all wounds completely. It just makes them smaller.
That's nice. Using humour to cope with death.
Oh, yes. Absolutely.
You're like, I'm English, obviously.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Grief therapy. Have you done any specific grief therapy?
Yes. Yeah. So three times I've done. So the answer is yes to yes or mess, and yes to doing it. I've done it three times. I think sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. I think it just depends on the person. But the overwhelming answer is yes.
Okay. Crying in public, we did touch on this.
Yes.
Nice.
Yes. I think if you need to cry, you should cry. I don't think you should need to worry.
Yeah.
About other people's
thoughts. I also always think, like, I'm so bad of, like, I never cry when I, like, feel like I should. And then I'll be like, when I get home, I'll have a good cry. And then you almost, like, get into this pattern where you learn to, like, stop it.
Yeah, yeah,
and then
yeah.
After a few years, you're like, well, that can't be good.
Yeah, yeah.
That's going to come out somewhere.
You think, oh, yeah, I'll cry when I get home, and you don't.
No.
And then you just, as you said, you just pushed it further down.
Yeah.
And then it would just come out eventually in the future at one moment. But
exactly.
Yeah, yes to that. Obviously, I'm not doing this particularly quick fire, but I apologize.
Okay. And the last one is annual rituals. So doing like birthdays, letters, even meditations to someone, like to remember them.
Yes.
I like that. And I like the one that you said with your mum's birthday at Christmas.
Yes. Like, yeah, yeah, it's a lovely thing.
Canapes and champagne in the morning.
Yeah.
That feels very glamorous way to honour her.
It is a very glamorous way to honour her, yes.
I'm sure she deserves.
Yes.
Well, thank you so much for coming on to talk about
it.
And yeah, I feel very honoured that I get to talk to you, like, because I know this is only going to be the beginning of probably like a massive platform and amazing things that you do with your story. So yeah, thank you so much for coming on.
No, thank you.
Loved it. Cool.